people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Well, guys, it's a new year, and we have our second new year of the show, which is exciting because we've got everybody spread out. Matt's over in Scottsdale. I'm here in the studio. And Aaron, of course, is snowed in somewhere up north. You know, that always happens with him. But it's a new edition of Shift and Steer, Racing Rides, People and Places. Guys, hey, good to talk with you.
Yeah. You go first. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to apologize in advance. If we have a little bit of lag or something, it's because we have so many people calling in. But, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about. I want to talk about and get into and really spend a ton of time on the auctions because this is the big Scottsdale auction week. But I thought we'd start it out with a little bit of extra information. You know, the Detroit Auto Show just got over, and what once was the North American International Auto Show, the big news is that a lot of the car companies aren't even going there anymore. Not a lot of them, but fewer every year. But there's still a really good share of things that are debuted there. And I thought, Matt, did you see that new Shelby Mustang that they had there?
Actually, we talked a little bit about it on the other shows and stuff this past week as well. But when I got into Arizona yesterday and went by a few of the auctions, we'll get into that. But yeah, so they have the new Shelby GT500 on display in the Ford booth at Barrett Jackson out here. So it was cool to kind of get up on it and actually see it in person. And it's every bit as cool as you expect it to be and what you're seeing in the photos. The front end is very aggressive. The carbon fiber wheels are badass. It has a 16.5-inch front rotor with six pistons. I believe six pistons on that. I think this is the largest disc, certainly on any American sports car, and one of the largest discs on most sports cars out there. I'm not sure where we're getting 16.5 these days, other than the Mustang, but it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool car for sure.
And 700 horsepower. From a blown 5.2 liter V8. I mean, 700 plus horsepower. Jeez. Everything's getting lots of horsepower. Have you seen the car, Aaron?
Yeah, I totally liked the post that Matt did. That thing sounds amazing.
It does. It does. It sounds really cool. But the one thing that I saw from Detroit, and I don't know if you guys saw it, but man, you know, the Grillmaster, and I'm not talking about going out in your backyard. What is going on with these grills on some of these cars? The cars and the trucks are getting just like almost too much.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because of fuel efficiency and things like that. We've got these cars with these giant grills, but you get up on them, and most of them are blocked. Most of them are blocked up.
But they're for the electronics. They're reflectors.
The radiator. Yeah, it's just it's an interesting kind of design idea that's going on over there. Some of them are okay. Some of them are a little silly.
Lexus was the first one that we saw, you know, kind of coming out with this giant grill. Then that GM truck came out recently where it was like, oh my God, what did they do there? But have you seen the concepts coming from BMW? Some of those, like, crazy grills on those?
Yeah, but not even just concepts. So the BMW X7 SUV that, which here at the LA Auto Show, everybody talks about how the grill was so giant. And it's sort of the kidney-style grill, but it's bigger and it kind of leans back at the top.
Yes, exactly.
After the Detroit Auto Show, BMW has announced that that's the new style for the 7 Series as well. So the 7 Series, BMW has a giant kind of grill on it like the X7 does.
Wow. I mean, you know, everything has a tendency to come out and then kind of grow on you. I don't know if it's going to grill on me, though. You know?
Does it grow on you like the bangle butt design 7 Series trunk lid? A very flat kind of...
Yeah, you know.
That was on the,
I remember when that came out, and it was like such a change. And I had a PR guy ask me. I was at the LA Auto Show, and he goes, "Hey, what do you think of the new 7 Series?" And I went, "I'm hoping it grows on me." You know, it just at the time. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that was the one trend that we're seeing, is that those giant grills, even that Shelby that we were talking about, has that huge mouth, which when you look back, the very first performance car that I ever remember seeing, that was that Mitsubishi. Remember when their rally car kind of had that big mouth on it? And
yeah,
it was kind of like, wow, what happened there? But it, that grew on me. But
yeah, these are almost like a Lincoln. A Lincoln's always had that big nose. It doesn't look like a mouth, though. I think the difference between the BMW and the other car you're talking about is the BMW has a big nose. The mouth is that lower part of the grill. The Mustang has a mouth, but the BMW has a giant nose, right?
Well, maybe these designers are watching a lot of Predator movies and video games, and it's influencing their designs.
No, because it's a nose. It's a nose. I'm telling you, I'm looking at a photo of it right now, and it's got a big lower grill with those nice big air scoops on the side.
Yeah.
That's the mouth. But that's a Jimmy Durante nose or something, you know?
You're dating yourself.
Big old wide. So, big old wide nostril.
Okay, I'm gonna change subject to one of Matt's favorite things in the world, Tesla. And did you hear what Tesla did this week, Matt?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, and I'm going to take a guess, because I don't know if we're reading the same news, but the big hacker conference, this is a legal hacker conference where people submit things to be hacked for prizes, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and Tesla submitted a Model 3 to see if it could be hacked by people.
Right.
And I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but that's what I read.
Well, there's actually several bits of information about Tesla. That wasn't where I was going, but go ahead. Continue with that line.
Right. So I think the prices range from like $250,000 or something to $350,000 or up to $350,000. And so here's the question. It's like, where are we with technology? Do we think any technology is non-hackable? It kind of seems like... Mm-hmm. Where, you know, every time I scroll through some news, there's some other article about, you know, some website that got hacked and everybody's information got stolen. And
my opinion is that nothing is not hackable. I mean, nothing is not hackable.
Right.
I read an article about a government installation that was totally dry. I forget the technical term for it. You might know it. But where it wasn't on the web, it didn't have phone lines. I mean, it was completely, and it still got hacked because somebody was able to get in, they think, with some kind of USB that went to here or there. But everything is hackable. Everything can be, and these cars, come on, these car companies don't have what the government has to refrain from it. It may not happen the week it comes out, but at some point it's going to get hacked. You know, it's just a matter of time. It's out there in the world. It's going to get hacked.
Yeah, so this article, I'm looking at an article in Forbes, and it says no one's done it yet as of 4 days ago, but there's a $900,000 offer from Tesla for anyone who can hack the Model 3.
Yeah, somebody's going to hack it. I mean, there's no way.
You'll read about things, websites, institutions, and stuff. They're like, we've never been hacked. Yeah, because nobody's tried. It's like if somebody tries, you know, all you need is the right person or a group of people to try, and they'll get done. There's just so many things out there that not many things are on the list. They're not interested in you.
That's why you're not hacked. If they're interested in you, you're going to be hacked.
Because you're boring.
Yes, exactly.
You haven't been hacked because you're boring.
But The other thing that they that came out this week was that Tesla is laying off 3,000 people. And, you know, they had a layoff not that long ago. And that falls on top of market news about that that they're starting to fall behind. Why? Because now the big automakers around the world are deciding to go head-to-head with them. They had that blank canvas for a while. They had that no man's zone, and now all of a sudden, it's I think it's catching up with them.
Well, they've got open patents too, right? All that stuff too. So they're kind of inviting everybody else to join in. I don't know how much that'll affect their technology. I think because everybody uses their technology, right?
Aaron, that's a great note, because when they announced this week, I thought to myself, how egotistical it was of him to go, hey, I'm putting my patents, they're open out there. Why would you do that? And now everybody's using them to go against him. And, you know, you can do that. You can be altruistic, but in business, it's a little hard to be altruistic, you know?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, certainly from all the auto shows that we've seen. 2020, the model year 2020 is going to seem to be pretty big for electrification. So that could mean, you know, toward the end of 19, you know, we've already had the Jaguar I-Pace. You're going to see BMWs, Audis.
Cadillac. You know, so many, yeah, cars, everybody.
Yeah, Cadillac.
Now, Matt, you're at Bear Jackson. Ford. You had said that the Mustang was there. Have you seen the actual in-the-flesh Toyota Supra yet there?
Yes, that was next on the list as well. But real quick, before I get to that, Ford just made a big announcement saying that their trucks are going to go electric as well.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That just makes sense. Yeah, so there's going to be some version of F-150s that will be electric and or hybrid. And I'm a fan of this, though. After seeing, like, the Rivian truck at LA Show, we talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, by eliminating the gas engine on a pure electric vehicle, you have much more room and storage to go, you know, you could kind of get rid of the drivetrain and transmission. And, you know, that Rivian truck has storage going, like, completely through the truck. You know, of course, all the batteries are underneath, sort of in the floorboard. But if you take into effect the amount of torque and fuel efficiency from a work truck standpoint, and you have certain routes that you do every day, and, you know, it would make a lot of sense to do. I would imagine that they would want to start with, you know, fleet trucks, like, you know, whatever companies that buy 35, 40, or 100, you know, F-150s, and they use them each day, and they all go back home to their home base, and the people drive their regular cars home. Like, all those trucks can be charged all night, and then they can do their routes during the day. It seems interesting to me.
Yeah, not to mention that jump seat that, you know, when you don't have a full crew cab and you just have that jump seat, well, now they can make it a little bit bigger so that you're not crunched back there. I mean, now, of course, none of us really need extra leg room, but there are people that do, like producer Rick. So.
Yeah. New Toyota Supra.
Tell us about it.
Here at Bear Jackson, Bear Jackson's always been very good about their, you know, their charity car. They work with all the manufacturers, Chevy, Ford, now I guess Toyota. And they get these the big charity cars. You can often get VIN number one or something cool like that, or two or three or five or whatever.
Yeah, like, aren't they selling VIN number one of one of the Mustangs there tomorrow, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're selling the Shelby. I don't know if it's been one, but they're definitely getting – it probably is. You know, it's kind of a cool deal. I'm curious to see where that goes. And I'm pretty sure that Bear Jackson's rules are, you know, they don't take a fee on the thing. They're there. They do the whole charity thing. And I guess their contribution basically is the marketing and the venue and not taking a fee, which is fair.
I think
it's a fair gig. So, so we saw the Toyota Supra, and I would say it looks a little cooler in person than I thought it would. There were some aspects of it that I certainly liked, some that were a little bit Like there's a side vent treatment behind the rear door on the quarter panel, kind of a cool kind of vent treatment there. And from what I can tell, it's not functional. So I didn't know we were still doing that. I still didn't, you know, like as big as a Mustang guy as I am, it's like how many, you know, new edge Mustangs and SN95 body comp Mustangs do we have these scoops on the doors, you know, behind the doors where they weren't functional at all. I'm not sure why we're still doing that in the world of where aero is so important. The new GT500 has so much, active aero. I don't mean active in the sense that it moves. I just mean that it's functional aero. Why does the Supra have fake scoops on the sides? That was kind of weird. But
yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It's kind of cool
it?
Looking. I think I like the back of it more than I like the front of it.
Yeah.
I don't know that it helped that Toyota has it on display with the previous Supra.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's kind of odd. Yeah.
You know, they have the new Supra, like, up on, like, a stand, but it's, like, tilted, so it's kind of, like, up in the air and tilted, but then on the ground next to it, like, a white, MK4? Yeah, sure, that looks a little dated, and certainly, like, one of the things, like, that really dates cars for some reason are headlights. When you start looking at the headlights of the cars, it really kind of dates cars. Like, you can go to any one of these auctions and walk up to, like, the Bugatti EV, whatever, 12 or 16 or whatever it is. Yeah. And you're like, hey, the car's super futuristic, but why does it got the headlights out of a Buick Regal?
It's got bulbs in it. Why does it have bulbs, you know? But especially if they're
like
yellow.
There's like a square or rectangular headlight that is literally just pulled off a shelf someplace, and they built these crazy bodies around them. So anyway, the Supra kind of drops the ball a little bit, the older one on the headlights, making it feel a little dated when it's next to the new one. But the old Supra was such a beautiful car. This new one's going to be interesting. We know that it was built alongside the teams at BMW, and the engine in the Supra is the BMW inline six turbocharged engine with 335 horsepower. Now, I love the idea that it's turbo because old Supra guys with the turbos, you could do a lot with them. And there's a lot of BMW tuning out there. So, yeah, maybe we can look at bigger turbos and maybe we can just tune them and get another 40, 50 horsepower out of them without swapping the turbos. I'm sure there's a lot of cool hop-up stuff you can do on it. I don't think it's a hit in regard to look, because I think every single like social media post that is out there has been like, what do you think? Is it good? Is it bad? Whereas actually something like the GT500, for example, that did come out, everyone's like, it's pretty cool. You know, there's some people like, yeah, the mouth is too big or the grill's too big and why they black out the front bumper or whatever. But for the most part, it's kind of a home run. Like the Dodge Demon was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like we like it. It's kind of a home run, you know. We're not getting that reaction with the Supra, so it's going to come down to the numbers. How does it perform? Can the Supra fall into the world of something like the Nissan GTR? We all love the GTR, but mostly we love it because of what it represents. It's just an animal of a car. But nobody would ever, like, walk up on a GTR and go, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. We see the beauty of that car because we understand what it represents. And the Supra could sort of fall into that category. 50-50 weight ratio, which is kind of cool. It will not be, from what I understand, both the GT500 and the Supra will not be available with a manual transmission. It both will have some sort of paddle-shifting transmission. It's going to be interesting because people keep saying the Shelby is a 7-speed paddle-shifted automatic, but we know that 7-speed is built by Tremec. So it could be more like a dual-clutch 7-speed manual. And I'm not sure I would call it an automatic per se. And when you say automatic, I think torque converter, right? Don't you guys think torque converter?
Well, yeah, torque converter.
Totally.
But now, so what you're saying in essence is if that Supra had the nose of the new GT500, we'd have a hit? Because you like the ass.
we might have a hit. I think the hood of the GT500 is bigger than the entire Ford or the Toyota Supra.
Exactly.
I was reading some details about it. How when they were developing the Toyota, they were struggling to get a perfect 50-50 weight ratio, and they were very close. They were like 59% or 51 or 50 point something percent in the front. And the engineers moved the engine back just 4 millimeters. And that 4 millimeters hit it right on the nose, the 50-50 ratio. So there is a lot of thought into the performance of this car. So it's going to be interesting to drive the Supra. I for one, would love to try it out.
It sounds like it. Always have liked the Supra. I liked it from the beginning, and it would be a really cool car to test and check out. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, it's kind of strange to see the Supra also in NASCAR. You know, it seems mm-hmm. like two totally directly opposed worlds, but the car looks bitchin' in the NASCAR, you know, colors, and, you know, they showed it at Detroit, and it looked awesome. It looked really cool. So,
Here's my biggest concern with the car is I saw it in person, but without touching it, without driving it, without even opening a door and sitting in it, is this car starts at $49,000 and change. The first 1,500 launch edition cars are like $57,000. I'm fine with the dollar amount. My concern is every time I see the Supra, I think of the Nissan 370Z, and I think of the Scion FRS, right, or whatever they're calling it now, the Toyota 86 or something. And both of those cars I like those cars for what they are, but those cars are built for a particular price point. You get in the Scion, and you realize there's a lot of plastic. There's just not a lot of money put into that car as far as the luxury items on the interior, because it needs to be a fairly inexpensive car. And the 370Z, although that's a cool car, you can load it up to $40,000 with all of the options, but there's still something about that car where, you know, you close the doors and it feels a little bit like it's lacking some of the, you know, some bending material and things like that. Now, I get it. That's what those cars are supposed to be. They're made to be lightweight. They're made to be quick. But when you start spending $50,000, $52,000,
$55,000
on
a sports car, like, you want more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I want that door to close with confidence, and I want that leather to be pretty nice, and, you know, and you want some cool with contrast stitching and leather-covered dash, and, you know, you want some things in there that that show the price difference of that car. You want it to feel good and solid. You know, it's interesting because no doubt the BMW Z4, which is the sister car of the Supra, you're going to get in that car, and there's a certain amount of thump when you close that door and a certain amount of tension on opening the door handle and all the things you expect from a BMW being a luxury car. And I'm sure the BMW version of the car is going to be heavier, and for those reasons, you know. So it'll be interesting to see when you get into Supra, is it going to feel like you're getting into a quality car?
Yeah, you want it to feel like the money you spent. I gotcha. And, you know, now, Aaron, did you notice all I did was ask him how it looked?
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, and I got to tell you, you know, we were talking about the nose on these cars, and the new Z4 Z4 has that big nose, which I think on a low-profile grill and a big mouth, it actually doesn't look bad. And their new 8 Series and 7 Series, it looks fantastic. But I think the body line looks so much better on the BMW than it does on that Toyota Supra. I'm not loving it. It's awkward to me, you know.
Well, we'll have to see how it looks. Yeah, it's interesting. Hey, now I want to ask you guys: have you seen that ad that's been running, the Chevrolet ad, where they've got a big warehouse and they've got all these cars covered up and you know, they've got logos on them, like Ford logo, the Honda logo, the Toyota logo. Have you seen that one?
Yeah,
where they pull them off, and it's a Chevy underneath.
Actual,
Now, they just pulled that ad that claimed better reliability than Ford, Honda, and Toyota. I guess there was some pullback in asking them where they got the facts. So their official response was they decided to put their money into different marketing. You know, an ad that only been out a week. I mean, but that I just found that kind of interesting. One last thing before we get into the auctions in Scottsdale, something that I saw that I just love the looks of this car. I don't know if you saw it, but I know you guys both dig it. Have you seen that Porsche 718 Cayman GT4, the rally car?
Oh, yeah. I don't think I have seen it.
Oh, my God. Well, they just confirmed today that they're actually going to put it into production and that the consumer can buy it. It has those four enormous, you know, lights across the front, like, you know, you just remember of the rally cars having. It's got the giant roof-mounted scoop. And not only that, it has a 3.8-liter flat six that puts out 420 horsepower. And
I'm looking at it. It's good.
Oh, it's awesome. And I guess they're going to make it available for guys that want to go, you know, racing and go out and buy one of those. And I just think
it's
awesome.
GT4 Club Sport Rally Car.
Yeah, for the RGT class. And it's just...
it's cool.
It's really cool. It's really cool. And I just thought it was awesome. But, hey, before we go into the auctions, let me tell you something. Everybody has a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, you know, pick up some milk. Well, here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket. It's just may be the most rewarding thing you do today. And that extra money in your pocket, you could put towards a car at the auctions. And, you know, Matt, you're the only one who's over there. This is the first Barrett Jackson I've missed in almost over 25 years. I was trying to calculate it, and I don't know. But so I was pretty bummed, and I always enjoy going over to Gooding and RM and, you know, Russo and Steele, all the ones that are going on. And I thought I'd start this off. I know you're over there, but I went in and looked at the results from Wednesday, which I thought was always kind of an indicator because, you know, Barrett Jackson being that it's almost a week now, and the auction starts on Tuesday. It used to be, do you guys remember how it used to be that it was like, you know, the cars were kind of a little bit less caliber on Tuesday and Wednesday? You'd kind of go, what, man, a Pacer? Why is that going across the Barrett Jackson? And the prices were like sub 20,000. I mean, do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Well, on Wednesday, here was the top 10. They had two cars that tied for top 10. One was, now this is what's funny, a 72 K5 Blazer. This thing looked bone stock, had dog dish hubcaps, but it was really clean. $71,500, and it was tied with a Bentley GT, an 05 that went for $71,500. Then you had a 65 327 Corvette. It was a really nice white and blue 350 horse, and it went for $74,800. Right behind that was a 71 wow. Bronco at $77,000. Full customized. It had a full cage and everything. And now, Matt, number seven was a 70 Boss 302 race car, A-spec class for $78,000. This was a full-on. It was a real Boss 302 car, but it was a full race car. You couldn't drive it on the street. But, Matt, this one, number six, a 2011 GT350R Ford Shelby. You familiar with that car?
What year?
A 2011 GT350R Ford Shelby. They said it was made by Shelby. I watched it go across the block, and at first I thought, oh, wow, a GT350, you know, a 350R. And then I realized, wait a minute, this isn't one of the new ones. This is a 2011. And I guess Shelby made them? And it was just kind of funky looking. Some of the body panels on it and the grill and everything like that. I mean, have you ever seen one of those? Because I hadn't.
Oh, well, it's the white one with the blue stripes. Right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I know the car that you're talking about. Yes, I didn't know how many they made. But I'm interesting. Did it sell?
$82,500. Brought it in at 6 on Wednesday. Number 6 in the top sellers.
Wow. I want to say wow. Dad had one of those. Was it a 350 or a 500?
Well, it's a 350, but it's not an old one. It's a newer body style. And No, right.
I think Dad had a 2011 GT 500.
Really?
Yeah, and I remember because when he talked to I think, Lee Iacocca back then, Lee was saying, oh, you know, you can't run that car over 600-something horsepower because the rear seat will blow. And, you know, and they were really still in their early stage of development. And I think it was white with blue stripes. And I think he sold it for like $40,000, and it still is in Marin. I think that was a 2000.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it; it looks just like that.
Huh? Yeah, it was one that I hadn't.
I think what you're talking about is a different car, and you would have been talking about the supercharged GT500. This Shelby,
yeah.
This is the one that this is a post title package kind of deal. Like this is Shelby America and Vegas built the car.
That's what I figured.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, it's one of those where
yeah.
It didn't come from Ford this way. It went to, you know, it's like one of their afterbuilts. Yeah. But hey, got $82,500.
I'm looking at it now. Yeah. It looks very strange. It's got like a real strange kitted kind of look.
Exactly. There you go. It looks
yeah.
like an aftermarket kit. Like somebody, but like I said, it got $82,500. Somebody loved it. Number five.
Wow.
Was a 57 Chevy 210, and this one had a Morrison chassis. It had, I mean, it was, you know, not my style, but it was done very well, built well, $88,000, showing that those Tri-5s are still strong. And number four on Wednesday was a 7911T, just real bone stock, white. Matt, what do you think that went for? Porsche 911T. A 70.
Ooh, I don't know. 911T should be doing pretty well.
Yeah, and it's number four for the day.
Did you? 250.
Well, you're way.
Ooh, I'd say 150.
Okay. Now remember, guys, number five was 88,000, and we're only to number four. But anyways, it was $92,400, and.
How much?
$92,400.
Oh, wow.
Remember when you could buy those cars for like $15,000, $20,000 every day of the week?
Yeah.
Number three, now this is where Barrett Jackson does it well. You get two, three guys that just, hey, man, I'm going to have another drink. Oh, look at that. Let's get it up there. You know, this was a 48 Chevy pickup, and I got to say it was a poor street rod pickup because it, you know, had nice paint on it, but it had the cheapest cast aluminum wheels you could buy. It was one of those where when you look at it from the side, they pulled the seats out of some, you know, 80s Buick and they're sticking up, you know, and it was just, and I was like, you've got to be kidding. As I watched the bidding keep climbing and climbing, I was like, no way. And $99,000. Some guy
he's
going to get home and go, hey, what do you think of my 48 Chevy pickup? And they're going to go, well, you know, change the seats, change the wheels, suspension. I don't even know what the motor was or anything. But I was really surprised at that one. Number two of the day was a 70 Chevelle SS454, but it was an LS6 car. And it was a convertible LS6 car, which is even rarer. And it went for $110,000. What's really surprising about that, you guys, is that not 10 years ago, those cars were above $250,000. And they went lower than this. So they're on their way back up because 2 years ago, that car was an $80,000 car. But they're on their way back up, those, you know. But it also shows that the modified cars – you know, that you can actually get in and drive and enjoy with some modern suspension stuff, they're holding their money against the factory restored muscle cars. And number one of the day at 111,000 was a 69 Dodge Charger RT 440 car. Really nice looking, blue with a white vinyl roof, rally wheels, and you know, all of this, what we're getting to is that we've all been to Barrett Jackson when, I've been when it was just 2 or 3 days, but it's been growing, and it's been getting longer. But now we're seeing the caliber of the cars, and Matt, with you being there, I mean, last night, it looked like a Saturday, didn't it?
Yeah, it was full yesterday, Thursday when I was at the event. It was pretty full, so I'm excited to get back over there on Friday. And,
but I mean, even the prices were up there. I mean, it was full, it was packed, and the prices were pulling incredible money. I mean, it was a little schizophrenic. I mean, you'd see one car come across and go for hardly anything, but then you'd see the good stuff was really pulling good money, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were. I talked to a couple. A guy and his wife that built a Bronco. It's like a light blue. They did a nice job, Coyote engine in it. And the woman was telling me that she and her daughter like mixed paint samples like 4, 5, 6 times to get the right hue, and they kind of did it as like a project for them to do together, which I love that story. And they were just around their car and nervous about it. And they're like, I don't know, some of these Broncos aren't moving that well. And I was like, well, what are you looking to get? And no, they didn't really tell me, but they at one point they sort of indicated that they were into the truck for about $90,000. I think they were just hoping to get their money out of it. It actually did very well. I think it sold for like $140,000.
Well, good for them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So that worked out really great. And, you know, when I came out here Thursday, I swung by both Gooding and RM auction to see their previews. I want to swing by and see the cars before they started moving them. And very similar, sort of typical of Gooding and RM. There's always a couple of flagship cars, but they often share, you know, similar cars. Like both of them have a Gullwing. And both of them had a 288 GTO Ferrari. Some pretty interesting cars. But
the one thing that I always notice is that Gooding sticks to very high-end European and rarity. Not that RM doesn't, but RM will throw in some oddities. You know, RM will have the Jeeps and the hot rods and, you know, the albeit rare and unique, but they don't. You never see that kind of stuff at Gooding. You don't see a hot rod sitting in you know.
You're right. No hot rod, but Gooding definitely had. They had a couple of cool Land Cruisers. They had a Pontiac GTOs. They had a '67 Camaro over there that I saw.
As long as they're the rarest '67 Camaro you're ever going to find, right?
Yeah, or just a very nicely done one. It wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't like Yenko or
right.
Nikki or anything like that. But, I believe RM auctions are Thursday, Friday, and Gooding is Friday, Saturday. So I don't really have much yet as we record this, an apple.
Yeah, I actually looked it up. But, Gooding is Friday and Saturday this year, and RM is Thursday and Friday. So we're
right.
Yeah. So
well, I can tell you that I went to Gooding and I saw a beautiful Ferrari 288 GTO. This thing was just, I don't know if it was restored or just well maintained, but done to the nines. Looking under it, it was fantastic. And then I went to RM. They had a 288 GTO. Great. Not as good as the one at Gooding, but still good. And the one at RM, as we record this, sold for $3.36 million for a 288
Ooh.
GTO.
Really?
So, wow. That's big money. Jesus.
I mean, those have always pulled, but not that kind of money.
we know that our buddy Ken Lingfeld is like the happiest guy in the world right now because he bought him years ago. He's got a gorgeous 288 GTO. And I believe he has the Ferrari F12 GDI.
Okay.
And a 2017 GDI DF. This car was cool looking, man. I mean, just like silver and black and carbon fiber and all that stuff. I know Ken's is red because all of us are red, but these are high dollar cars when they were coming out. And
yeah.
Like, if you're one of those special guys that gets on the list, I don't know if they are 500,000, 600,000. Well, 2017 that just sold, assuming like you had to have it for 2 years and you could sell it, $1 million.
I was just going to say that the F12 PDF is a million-dollar car right now. I wonder if that was my friend Rob Roscoff. He had his for sale at San Francisco Ferrari for, I think, 1.1479 or something. That's like 1.1 for sale. I wonder if they took it to auction. Because his is that beautiful platinum silver. It almost looks bare metal. And it's got like that blood red interior, but it's only the seats and the side panels, just a few trimmings. And it is gorgeous. It's got hardly any miles on it, and it's a gorgeous car. But they did make the F12 TDF, they did make a bare aluminum one, which is really rare. And I think those are going for $1.5 million.
There was a bare aluminum one at Russo and Steel Newport when I was there, and at the auction down there. And you know, it was a no sale, but they're just bitching cars. I mean, but you're right, Matt. They were high dollar when they came out. But if you can buy a car and you make money on it, LaFerrari, you can actually. I mean, it's the best thing to do. Now, Matt, did you see that? You know, here I'm gonna stick my foot in my mouth because I said at Gooding you don't usually see hot rods or anything, but they had a 48. The 48 Spurgeon Giovanni Roadster there, which is an old Bonneville SCTA car. Did you see that there?
I did. I didn't get a chance to get up on the car. We went by it, but some people were around it and talking, so I didn't even get pictures or anything on it. And then,
then
we had to move to the next one, so I don't have much info on it. But,
well, the thing about it is,
pretty cool stuff.
I mean, I know the car, and I'd seen it over the years. It was a Class A Roadster, and it was the champion in 48. It's been on the cover of Hot Rod Magazine and everything like that. But it's very basic. I mean, it's like a lot of the hot rods back then. You know, it was made from a 25 Chevy Roadster. It was, you know, a four-cylinder Chevy motor in it. And, yeah, it set all kinds of class records and stuff like that. But it's not something you can go club racing in. It's basically a trophy that you're going to put in display, maybe take to some shows. And they had their estimate on it was $250 to $350. I don't think it's there. I don't think that caliber of a hot rod is really there. What do you guys think?
Ouch. Yeah. Yeah, it seems a little high.
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, there could be more to the story that we still don't know. I wish I had got a chance to get on it and read up more about it. But
if it was that rare and noteworthy, Bruce Meyer would already have it in his building.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Wait, do we lose the connection there, guys?
What?
No, I said there was such a lull. I said, did we lose the connection there, guys? No.
Oh, no, it's the same thing because Matt and I are both calling in. It, like you said, it mutes the other person. And
yeah, but no, it's
so I think
it's
being conservative.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a cool little car. It has tons of records. It was, you know, it was part of the start of hot rodding and stuff. But I'm thinking maybe 150 to 200,000, not 250 to 350. But we'll have to see, because really what it comes down to is what somebody will pay. Matt, did you happen to see that amongst all of the 60s Maseratis and the 50s era Ferraris that were there, did you see this? What?
I was going to say, I don't know. I didn't get a chance to watch much of the auction stuff, but the car that seems that everybody's asking about already on social media, R.M. Sotheby's had a Vector. Actually, they had two Vectors.
A blue one.
They had the, I think it was a purple prototype Roadster. And then they had, like, the teal WX3 prototype Vector. Certainly, like, these are, like, the king of Radwood, right? Either, you know,
I never even thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right.
So the Roadster prototype, which I saw, I don't love it as much because it's not recognizable as much as the regular one. It's the coupe.
Yeah.
But the Roadster sold for $500,000, and the very cool, teal Vector prototype sold for $615,500. Now that's an interesting number because the estimate was $450,000 to $550,000, and a lot of times these cars fall within the estimate with the fee involved.
Yes,
right. So to, for this to go $615,000 on a $450,000 to $550,000 estimate, some people really wanted this Vector, and it's interesting to see that these things are moving as well. And a little fun side note, you know who else has a Vector? Our buddy Ken Lingenfelter.
No way. And another side note is that Boyd and I built all the wheels for those things. We used to go over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to go over there and we built wheels for them. And I remember seeing them back in the day being built, and it was right here in Southern California. And they've always been. You know what? They look very futuristic even today. They've got those angular lines and, kind of like a B-1 bomber or something, you know?
They're actually nice. They're actually nice looking. They're not bad looking. Hey Matt, too, real quick, do me a favor. Keep an eye on Dad's GT500 because it's up again at Barrett-Jackson. I think this is the third time it's been up. You know, he sold that thing. I mean, Brad can tell the story. He was there, but he sold that thing for $250,000 back then, and I think it's seen like 100-something thousand. I'm curious if it's going to jump down to what they're going for now, which is only like 90 to 100 grand.
When we sold it, gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think it was 2005, 2006, something like that. And he wanted to sell it, and we called, and we put together the whole thing because Mikey and I were selling six of our cars, so we put that whole thing together and told your dad to do a guitar, and then he goes, how about I throw in a case of tequila? We made a big show of it, and it went nuts, and that car went for $250,000, and everybody was surprised. And the guy who bought it was actually a guy I knew from Nebraska. He was a big Shelby, he bought and sold all the, GT500s and everything, and he would actually drive that around town. Everybody I knew in Nebraska go, oh, yeah, man, he drives that. It's like his everyday car, you know. And
that thing drives crazy. It's got like a real – Dad got that motor from Lee. It was a crate motor – not a crate motor. It was still in the crate, and it was an original motor from a GT500 – from a GT40. And the thing, even detuned, is like a beast.
It was loud as hell.
Yeah.
It was so loud.
This is the 67 GT500, and it sold in 2017 for 100. It's not the red one, sold for 110,000.
Yeah, 110,000 three or four years ago. Yeah. And because the guy who bought it, he brought it back and he resold it again, lost money on it. Now we're curious to see if it's below 100 or under, because Sammy's not there anymore. The guitar's not there anymore.
The Barrett-Jackson it says in 2017 it sold for 110,000.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
But it originally sold.
Ago.
Yeah. So the guy bought it for 250, and then it sold for one. You said 115, Matt?
110.
A 110, okay. But that happens all the time. We all know that. I mean, hell, I sold that concept Sunfire that I built for GM there the same year, and it was a wide-body Sunfire with a stock four-cylinder. It had nice wheels and tires, some carbon fiber on it and stuff, but two guys had to have it, and it sold for $112,000, and it came back last year, or no, excuse me, 2 years ago, and went across the block at 22. You know, so it's like, I mean, it's like, ouch, you know. So, but that happens all the time, you know. It's the Black Rose Mustang that I built has gone across a couple times, and it, you know, it's all in the presentation. And, you know, I think a lot of guys, hopefully they understand that. They're going to get a car that they want, buy, and drive, but not everybody's going to want it when they go to sell it. Hey,
yeah.
Back to our...
Go for $40,000, buy it, and I'll give you the money. Okay?
There you go. when does it go across? Does anybody know? Has anybody looked it up?
I think the Shelby goes at the end of the night, Friday night. And unfortunately, as you guys are listening to this, that would have been days ago. But I believe the... Your dad's car is lot 1147. Obviously, it's a no reserve car, and there's only one more car, I think, or maybe a few more cars after. I got to find out what time, but it's going to go Friday.
So by the time this is airing, what Matt's saying is that Matt will be saying to Aaron, "You told me to buy it if it was a good price, and I thought $65,000 was a good price. What do you mean you're not going to pay me back?"
So. I'll sell some stuff.
And Matt will go, "Well, don't worry about it. I use Brad's bidder number. So no big deal."
Well, I might get a text from Dad later just saying, "You owe me a bunch of money. I raised my paddle. You owe me a bunch of money. You better get over here."
I will be watching my phone. I will watch my phone. Because I told Dad the other day, I said, "You know, Papa, this thing goes for $100,000, you know, the way it did the last time." Because I remembered it went for just over $100,000. I said, "You know, you should just buy a pack and keep in the collection." Because I have memories of my Uncle Bucky, my late Uncle Bucky, who I have his Norton and stuff and the Mini. I have memories of him of going to the warehouse, and my Uncle Bucky restored much of that car himself. And he was black, head to toe, he was black because he was polishing those wheels by hand. And all the stuff that was blemished, Dad took off that car, and I put it on my 66 Mustang I had at the time. Anything that would fit or that I could modify a little bit to fit, I put on that car. And so I had some of those parts of my car. So it's got a good story from the family, and Dad got the motor from Lee. And, you know, I mean, it's like it's a pretty special car. And if it's just out there passing hands, I think this is the third time it's been resold. You know, I think it should come back to the family, you know. But Dad's like, "I can't drive it. I'm not going to drive it. I'm 70. And I'm like, "Yeah, but it needs to be in a collection." You know, he's not into, like, the collection. He's into... These are cars I drive. If I don't drive them, they're gone.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So. But hey.
Yeah, but this is an exception. You know, this and this old Trans Am, I think, are two exceptions, you know?
Well, the Trans Am I can agree with, definitely. Well, and this one was in a video, too, because that's how we promoted it. So, hey. Yeah. But we're running out of time, guys, and I know that Motor Raider is chomping at the bit to talk about Fox bodies. But before we do, I want to bring up two cars that I saw are over at RM, and one of them is just a badass car, and I know Matt saw it, was that 86 RS2000 Evolution, that Ford rally car?
Yeah. Oof.
Matt, how did it look in person? I saw you posted a photo, and I love that car.
I'm sorry, the RS200?
Yeah, the Evolution Ford rally car.
Yeah, very cool car. I think it sold for $400,000, $450,000.
Really?
Or maybe it was a no sale at, like, $450,000, but... I dig those cars.
Oh, it's cool! Yeah,
in the back. So it's interesting because I RM has the rally car, and then they also have the street car. The street car is a little less expensive. I want to say, I don't know, the rally car was like $400,000 to $500,000, and the street car was like $100,000 less, $350,000 to whatever. But the street car is only a handful, like $120,000 are homologated for the street.
Yeah.
They obviously don't have the racing history, but they're pretty cool in their own right. I dig those cars. I got up on both of those cars. They're a lot of fun. I'm curious to go back and check, you know, check online and see what they sold for. I'm pretty sure I saw the rally car go, but
right, it was just cool. Like when I saw it,
yeah.
But the one that I really questioned over at IRM was they had a 70 CUDA 426 Hemi car. It was red. It was black interior. I mean, everything right about it. 19,000 original miles documented. Had all the documentation with it, and they had an estimate of $200,000 to $250,000. Now, that car, not that long ago, remember when the Hemi cars were $1 million? And if it was a convertible Hemi, it was like stratospheric. And I mean, you know, if you had a red Hemi CUDA with 19,000 original miles, you were a millionaire. And now $200,000 to $250,000, those things have dropped like rocks.
Yeah, they have. But muscle cars are starting to pick up a little bit. Nowhere near those stratosphere kind of prices, but they're starting to move a little bit now, which is interesting. But they've got a long way to go to get back to where they were.
If you bought a Hemi at the top in the 90s, or even the early 2000s, mid-2000s, you definitely got a long ways to go before you're going to get your money back out of that car. So I think a lot of those are going to stay in collections for many, many years. But what's going into collections now, it seems like it's Fox bodies, Matt.
Yes.
Fox body. Hashtag Fox body boy.
That was pretty special, though. That was pretty special.
Let me just clarify real quick on the RS200 Evolution.
Yes.
The rally car version, which I thought was very cool. The estimate was actually 500,000 to 700,000.
Oh wow!
It was a no sale. The high bid was $435,000. It did not sell.
Cool car, very cool car.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
But it ain't no Cobra Mustang Fox body, okay?
in the world of Fox bodies, it was very exciting to see the 93 Cobra R model sell. And as for recording this, it all just pretty much happened, so I'm going to get some information on it. But I went and took some photos of the car, saw the car. Obviously very cool, still all wrapped in plastic, 551 miles on it. And, you know, for us, what your dad is saying, Aaron, is can you drive it? No, that has to go into a car collection of 30, 40, or 100 other cars because you can never drive it. It's wrapped in plastic, 551 miles. So you have to really be a collector for it. You know, you can't really do much with it. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, if you had one with 1,700 miles on it, if you put 200 miles on it, there's probably not much difference between having a car with 1,700 or 1,900 or 1,700 and 2,200. It's probably not that much of a difference. But 551, it is what it is. So anyway, it's a very cool car. I guess two people got very excited with the bidding on this thing. The hammer price is about $120,000. All in, it sold for a world record $132,000. And last night, I got a message from the guy who bought it. And so I'm trying to exchange some messages and get back with him to see if we can meet up over at the car and I can get a chance to talk to him. And if I do, I'll definitely give you guys
Matt, I already talked. I spoke with him this morning, and the reason he wants to get a hold of you is because apparently he is one of the most noted Chevrolet dealers in America. And he is doing a charity thing with this car where you can come hit it with a sledgehammer on the 4th of July.
That would be funny.
Can you imagine the people? They'd be freaking out. No,
funny because you mentioned dealer, and the record for the Toyota Supra was like on bring a trailer. Somebody bought a Toyota Supra for $121,000. Well, a dealer bought it, and now it's in their showroom with a sticker of $500,000.
Oh, really? So, yeah. Well, but no, that thing had the chalk marks, like you said, the plastic, but the guy who sold that, he brought quite a few of them. And what's amazing is, wasn't it just 2 years ago when we were there that there was a bunch of Fox Body Mustangs? I took a picture of you standing amongst them all.
Yeah. I think the 7-Up car that sold for a record at the time, I think might be back. If not, there's another one there.
Okay, so I wondered if that was the same one, the green one with the white top.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to. I got to go back and check the notes on it to see if it was the same one. But that was there as well. And, yeah, it seems like there's a row of Fox Bodies every year. And it's interesting because we see these one-off anomaly cars. We see the Acura Integra went to like Bear Jackson Vegas and got like $60,000. And then there was like a Honda S2000. I don't know the price, but I want to say it was like $40,000 that just sold somewhere. And that's one time. Now, you have to repeat that a couple times before you can start claiming the money. And yeah, some of these Fox Bodies are starting to get there. We've seen a few cars go now. As soon as that Cobra R sold for $132,000, a buddy of mine in Kansas City, who actually works at Pro Charger, Superchargers, he's got one that I know he's been putting out there to sell, but he never put a price on it. So the price popped up. He wants $105,000.
Yeah.
And he's got a Cobra R. A 93 Cobra R with like 1,700
Wow.
Well, you know what? It's I was going to say it's like all the collector cars. It's era. It's what guys grew up with and wanted. I mean, why do you love those cars? Because when you were growing up, it was like, oh, my God, if I could have one of those. But now guys are making money and they can afford the cars they always wanted, right?
Yeah.
But, Matt, what else have you seen out there that, you know, before we wrap it up, that you think is really going to pull a lot of money or just really outrageous? Or what have you seen so far?
Well, there's some interesting cars that we've got our eye on just to see what it does. There's a Lamborghini 400 GT at Gooding. It's not good at all. It's in terrible condition, but being that we just sold some Lamborghinis recently. Now we're curious to see what that car does. But there's some cool stuff around there. After seeing the 288 GTO at Gooding, at RM sell for $3.36 million, I'm curious to the one at Gooding what that goes for, because I would argue that's a nice car. And I don't think the estimate was that high. I think those cars are beating the estimate. We'll see how those go. And there's going to be some more fun stuff. There's a Tucker. There's a beautiful Tucker at RM as well, and we'll see how that does. I was a little disappointed that the Jaguar, the XJ220, did not sell at RM.
Oh, it didn't?
The high bid was about 300. Yeah, I think the high bid was about $375,000. I think they were looking for somewhere in the 400 to 500 range for it, but they just missed the mark. But you know, this is a car that I've been a fan of for years. And back when this car was $200,000, I was saying, you know, don't underestimate this car. It wasn't a successful supercar because it had a twin turbo V6. And now that we have four GTs and everybody's doing V6, fast cars with V6 engines in them, that XJ220 is starting to get attention again. And interesting information is the master of the XJ220 is a guy named Don Law. He's in the UK. He's the guy that restored one of our Newman cars. He out there and did the Goodwood Hill climb in the Newman car. And he's sort of the Bruce Pennypot of England, but his specialty is not Porsches. His specialty is Jaguars. And any racing version of the XJ220, he's had his hands on. He's campaigned the teams and built factory cars and all that stuff. Anyway, this XJ220 that did not sell at RM was a car that was fully gone through and maintained by Don Law. So I'm surprised that his name didn't help bring the extra money to that car, because I would say without a doubt, having a Don Law XJ220 is going to be a top-notch car. It was interesting because I saw the car. I was like, this is a really nice XJ220. And then I read that it was Don Law did the work on it.
Interesting, yeah.
Interesting, well, stuff, hey, for sure.
We got to wrap this episode up.
Days coming up.
Aaron wanted me to ask you, have you seen any Pinsgauers before we go?
I did not see any Pinsgauers, but I'm out here with our buddy Ice Sullivan. He's been on our show a few times, and his dad, and those are a couple of big boys from Texas, and they're jonesing for some kind of crazy off-road truck. They're looking at Hummers, like original Humvee and H1s and stuff. So they've been dragging me around. I've been looking at a lot of those things, and we're actually flying out of town next weekend to go check one out.
Cool.
Well, now, in all seriousness, I know where Rod Hall's old race car is. I think he won like $35,000-$40,000 for it. It's a nice truck. It's all been redone, and it's a full race body truck, and it's an H1. It's got a race history and everything, and then his son raced it. So it's for sale. It's orange and sand color and white. It's a beautiful truck. So if you guys are serious, let me know, and I'll give you the listing.
Cool. Hey, everybody. yes. What? I'm waiting.
I was going to say, you say H1 race truck, and I imagine the slowest race in the world.
I know. I was thinking the same thing I was saying.
Rod, my friend. No, the Halls and the Winkles race those trucks for forever, and they're not slow at all. You're thinking of the Humvee version, but the race version is it's fast. Yeah, the Humvee version's very fast.
Yeah.
The race version has just got a body over a chassis with a, you know, it's a, no. But hey, everybody, I want to say thanks to our sponsor, Geico. Be sure you go to geico.com and you know, tell them that Shift and Steer sent you. And also, I want to tell you, as you gear up for the biggest game in the season, Podcast One Sportsnet is teaming up with the Underdog Network to be your one-stop shop for all things football. Tune into the Underdog Sports NFL show to analyze the best plays of the postseason, or the Underdog Sports Fantasy Hour to create the perfect lineup before the best teams in the league duke it out in Atlanta on February the 3rd. Check out all the wonderful shows on the Underdog Network every week on the podcast, One Sports Net, or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Isn't that a coincidence that this show is going to talk about some big game on the same day, February 3rd, that they're having that big super that super dish in Atlanta? You guys don't even know what I'm talking about, do you? Because we're car guys.
We're car guys.
Hey, Matt, I'm sure you'll have more Fox bodies to tell us about and their net sales when we talk next week. But for now, we're going to call it quits. Matt, where can they find us online?
Yeah, check us out at shiftandsteer.com, and you can find us at Shiftsteer Media. And we're all on social media, so you know where we are.
Just Google us. Google Brad Fanshaw, Matt DeAndrea, or Aaron Hagar. And right after our top entries of our police records come in, you'll be able to find us. So, hey, Matt, thanks for calling in from Scottsdale. Have fun over there. And we're jealous we're not there. Say hi to everyone for us. And Aaron, stay warm up in the snow.
Thank you. Yeah, I just cleared a couple feet. It's, I think we got a little break now.
Okay, everybody.
Hey, real quick.
Yes.
Real quick, too, I'd like to mention that I need to start promoting this a little bit. I'm doing the Classic Car Cruise as part of the Classic Car and Celebrity Nice Caribbean Cruise March 2nd through the 9th. We still have a couple spots available. It's going to be with Tim Strange, Von Hot Rod, and myself. At the Classic 8th Annual Classic Car Cruise March 2nd through 9th. You can find it online through classiccarcruise.com. And, yeah, if you don't mind, check that out if you're interested in getting out of the snow.
It's not like a cruise night. It's like a Caribbean cruise.
No, it's a full.
And you're doing what, like a nightclub act on there?
Cruise.
You're doing like a nightclub
thing?
Yeah.
I'll be lounge singing in the lounge of the bar room. Yeah. No, it's really fun, actually.
Appearing in the Caribbean room is Aaron Hagar. So, and the Hot Rodettes, Aaron Hagar and the Rodettes. So cool. Good for you, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, everybody. Another edition of Shift and Steers behind you in your rearview mirror, and we'll be back next week.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save